Carter versus Commonwealth, Eric J. Livingston, Appellant Counsel, Craig W. Scholar, Assistant Attorney General, Appellate Counsel.
You may proceed.
Thank you, Chief Justice. May it please this honorable court, my name is Eric Livingston. I represent the appellant, Brando Carter. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for a vote.
All right.
Your Honor, the Court of Appeals erred in affirming the trial court in this constructive possession case. As the court well knows, constructive possession can be shown by circumstantial evidence, and the Commonwealth has to adduce sufficient evidence to show not only that my client could exercise dominion control over the cocaine or the gun or anything else in the glove compartment, but that he knew. He knew the illegal nature and character of the substance. The facts of the case are clear. The other co-defendants have already, all their charges have been dismissed in the Court of Appeals for these same arguments. The Court of Appeals only granted the conspiracy charge, which was reversed and dismissed. So I appealed the remainder, so here we are. My client was a front seat passenger in a vehicle occupied by two other guys. The second attorney argued the Williams case, and Williams was the backseat passenger in my case who had the money. Gave conflicting statements about the money, and the Court of Appeals found that, yeah, it's real suspicious. Conflicting statements shows a consciousness of wrongdoing or some sort of guilt, but can't tie him to the cocaine and the gun in the glove compartment. His charges were dismissed. The driver was Mr. Rory. Mr. Rory, all these individuals in the car had certain guilty and suspicious things about them, but as a whole, the driver was Mr. Roy. The car wasn't registered to anybody. The lessee of the vehicle came after the fact to get the car, but Mr. Roy, as the driver, the assumption would be that, well, he has control over or should know what's in the car, to include the glove compartment. My client was a passenger. The Commonwealth had no evidence as to how long he had been in that front passenger seat. My client was polite, was cooperative, made no evasive movements, made no statements. The Commonwealth didn't know or could prove whether or not the glove compartment was even locked. If I were given a ride from the Wawa block pass to where the traffic stop happened, I'd be in the car for about 15 seconds. I would be here today. They would have the same amount of evidence against me as they did against Brando Carter. He had, they didn't do any sort of testing to his fingers to see if there's any residue of cocaine. There was no testing done of the firearm, no testing done of the packaging. Nothing that connects anything in that glove compartment to my client besides proximity. The Commonwealth, in their brief to this court, talks about how, well, Dewan Roy has these little factors that are suspicious, and Mr. Williams has these factors that are suspicious, and that goes on from page 7 to page 8. And then on page 9, when the Commonwealth talks about my client, it goes to, well, the court can consider all these facts and circumstances to infer that my client knew what was in the glove compartment. Well, all we have against my client, evidence-wise, is proximity. It's improper, and it should not be permitted that because Mr. Roy was the owner of the car, well, we can infer that my client knew. The Court of Appeals specifically found that there was no conspiracy. The Commonwealth had no evidence of a shared or joint intent between the parties to commit any criminal act. So you've got a driver. I think he was arrested for DUI and some other stuff. His charges were dismissed. He was also within arm's reach of the glove compartment. You have the passenger in the back seat, who I think is the most compelling person, who has $3,000-something. First he says he finds it, and then he says his girl gave it to him, or something. Just, you know, he wants to throw the blame off himself. But he's in the back seat, so he's not even within arm's reach of it. So to infer a conspiracy, the Court of Appeals couldn't find enough evidence. In this case, that's all the trial court had. And I know why the trial court did it, and I don't want to cast any disparaging remarks on the late Judge Lee, but the charges that all these guys were initially facing were a number of gang charges, gang-related charges, conspiracies. There were different prisons communicating. All those charges were dismissed mid-trial on some motions to strike because of evidentiary issues on behalf of the Commonwealth. So then Judge Lee continued with the trial based on the drug charges and the gun charge because that's all that was left. And based on, I think it was possibly the wrong result for the right reason, but proximity alone has never been enough in the Commonwealth. In my brief, I cite the Coward case, and because it's very similar, although there was even more evidence in the Coward case than here. In the Coward case, Coward v. Commonwealth, he's in a Toyota, it's his mom's car, the police stop, and they see some cocaine on top of the center console. That cocaine was in plain view. He made no statements. There was no other evidence, no testing, nothing. And the court reversed that case, saying that absent any other facts and circumstances, you can't. The court couldn't infer that he knew the illegal nature and character of the substance. Clearly, he had dominion and control, the first prong of constructive possession, but not the knowledge prong. In our case, it's not even visible. If he had just gotten in the car, it's in a closed glove compartment, and there's no evidence that he moved, leaned, shifted, did anything. Look in the mirror, as you heard earlier in someone's case. My client did nothing. He's just in the passenger seat, follows all instructions, gets out, and these are the charges.
It does appear from the mass of these cases that the term glove compartment is a misnomer.
Well, nobody puts gloves in anymore. I guess a closed mask storage.
It doesn't need a response.
Keep your napkins and forks and spoons. But it's a misnomer. Obviously, it's a gun and glove compartment in this case. But it's not a glove compartment. Whatever was in the glove compartment, the Commonwealth can't show that my client had any knowledge of what was in the glove compartment. Had he been in there for 5 minutes or 5 hours, the Commonwealth's brief says, well, guns and drugs are valuable commodities, and no one's just going to leave them lying around. Well, that's fine. It's DeJuan Roy's driving the car. He's the lessee. Maybe it's the lessee's gun and coke. Maybe it's DeJuan Roy's gun and coke. If they had something, my client moving forward, my client shifting, my client doing something, furtive movements, behavior, there's nothing in this case that would point or support that my client knew or had any reason to know the illegal nature and character of the substance in the glove compartment beyond just proximity. So, Your Honor, the last point I want to touch on, and I'll save the rest of mine for rebuttal, the Commonwealth makes a point of talking about Maryland v. Pringle, and I saw some comments in there about what that case stands for, and that it would stand for the point that the proposition that because the drugs and...
Well, but that's a probable cause case.
Exactly. It's a probable cause case only for the support arrest, for a stop. If you've got cocaine in a center console and two guys, sure. There is enough probable cause that an officer can believe that a crime is being committed. It's one of these two guys. So you have probable cause that you can charge them. And then that's fine. Then take it to a court of competent jurisdiction to adjudicate whether or not you have the elements of a constructive possession case beyond a reasonable doubt. And in this case, Your Honors, the appellant's position is that the trial court did not, it was not a reasonable decision. It was, it's not a reasonable inference that just because his proximity, absent anything else, and even on a totality of the circumstances argument, this guy's made conflicting statements about the money. There's no evidence that my client heard that or knew that or was present for that conversation, or that the driver wasn't the lessee of the vehicle. There's no evidence that my client knew that. You know, there's not enough taken as a whole, even in the totality of the circumstances, to show the knowledge element, to prove a constructive possession case. So I'd ask this court to reverse the possession with intent to distribute cocaine based on that same theory. All three of these charges come from the same items in the glove compartment, the possession of gun while in possession with intent to distribute cocaine and the possession of firearm as a convicted felon.
All right.
Morning, the police court. Rich Taylor on behalf of the Commonwealth. First, I'm not sure if I heard counsel correctly. My understanding is Mr. Williams' conviction for possession is still pending in this court. It is true that Mr. Roy's convictions for possession and conspiracy were dismissed in the Court of Appeals, and Mr. Carter's conviction for conspiracy was also dismissed in the Court of Appeals, along with Mr. Williams' conviction. But Mr. Williams' conviction for possession is, my understanding, is still pending in this court. Given that, we do obviously have proximity and occupancy of the vehicle, which are factors a trial court can consider in determining whether or not he's guilty of possession. In addition to that, we have Mr. Williams in the backseat lying about where he got money from and storing the money in a fairly unique manner, where each bill is, the hundreds are together, flipped over, clipped, the 50s, 20s, so forth and so on. Not a usual manner in which money is kept, and is indicative of someone involved in drug dealing. We also have 20.5 grams of drug compartment along with the gun. If Mr. Williams is in the back seat lying about money, and he has some connection to the drugs because he's got a large sum of money, which is conducive to someone who's in the business of selling drugs, then it would strain credibility that Mr. Carter is just a hitchhiker or just a pastor, put in the front seat of the car directly in front of where the drugs and guns are. Common sense would seem to dictate if there's drugs in the front seat, you're going to put the innocent party as far away as possible in the back seat or somewhere else, or not even pick up someone. So the fact that he's in the car,
If you're the guilty party, you want the innocent party to be up against the guns and the drugs.
Well, I mean, that might be true, except for the fact that that also opens you up to either being discovered, like you need a Kleenex or something for the glove parts, opens it up, discovers it, and you have a witness against you, or the opportunity of having your contraband stolen. So there would be reasons not to put him there. I guess there could be some conceivable reasons to actually want him there as well. And unlike Coward, where the trial court basically said I'm convicting you because of the proximity and occupancy, here the trial court specifically said, taking the totality of the circumstances, the trial court did not say I'm convicting you just because of those two factors. But looking at the totality of what happened, given all the factors and various incriminating statements and conduct by the others, the court came to the conclusion that all three knew the drugs were there and that Mr. Carter was guilty of possessing what was in the glove box. Based on the evidence presented, I'd ask this court to affirm. I'd be happy to answer any questions the court may have.
All right. Thank you very much. Rebuttal?
Thank you, Your Honor. So I'll be briefer than my time allows. I see what my time is. Your Honor, Justice Kelsey's question it didn't occur to me, which I think is brilliant, that, yeah, if you're a guilty party and an innocent person gets picked up, you want that innocent person up there. If you're going to get stopped or if something happens, you have somebody to blame it all on. And he's in direct proximity to it. But still, even when the trial court decided and said, well, in the totality of the circumstances, I think everybody played a part, so they're all guilty. That's not the standard to prove the two elements of a constructive possession case. Mr. Williams, well, each of them have their own cases. Mr. Williams has an issue with his currency and the statements and all that, and all that would have to factor into the analysis as to whether or not he was in possession, which they're still going to have a hard time to prove the dominion control, perhaps, if he reached across. I don't remember if it was bucket or bench seats. But clearly, if it's folded bills and it's distribution bills that the vice officers usually testify to, bundled, banded, or stacked, that's a factor to determine an intent. You're still going to have to get, in his case, to dominion control and the knowledge component. It's going to be a harder case for Mr. Williams, even with all the currency, because you're going to have some more facts and circumstances to get it beyond reasonable doubt. DeJuan Roy, he's the driver of the car. That's about all the evidence there was for DeJuan Roy, and that case is already over. So Williams' hard part is his cash. What does my client have? My client is just in proximity. He has no cash. He has no conflicting statements. He's not the driver. He's not the lessee. There's nothing. There's no conversations. There's no furtive movements. There's nothing. There's not even any cocaine residue. Take 2 seconds to swab his hands and send it to the ion scanner, and you'd at least have a contact level or casual contact level of something if he had touched, handled it at all. I wouldn't have a case. If they can get a contact level of cocaine on his hands, I'm done. We wouldn't be here. They have nothing besides proximity. And the trial court, while well-meaning with this case on these facts, with the initial charges and these guys, for a constructive possession case, proximity alone is not going to be enough. Tying in the facts and circumstances and say, in a totality of the circumstances, I find they all knew, you've got to somehow ascribe to my client, Brando Carter, Williams lies about his money and the origins of it, and Mr. Roy is driving the vehicle. There's no conversation between the three. There's no evidence of any conversation. There's no evidence of joint conduct, and the Court of Appeal has already dismissed the conspiracy charge. So as a matter of law, we have no conspiracy. We have no agreement. We have no pre-planning. Without all that, without any of that information, there's no evidence to show that my client met the knowledge component of a constructive possession case. I ask this Court to reverse and dismiss.
Thank you very much. Call the next case.